All right, so Soul Care Sunday School, this is our first week of a series on temptation that will take between 2 and 12 weeks. Just kidding, probably like four-ish weeks is probably what we're going to go through. So this morning I wanted to have just a discussion on just an observation of what is temptation. And what are the sources of temptation? We're going to get into a lot of examining how temptation, how it can be so tricky, and how it can be so sneaky and destructive. But that's for the future weeks. But this morning, I wanted to think about what temptation is biblically. So it is helpful, I think, to when we start a new series, is to kind of think, okay, what do I already know about this, or what do I assume about this sometimes? And what does the culture think about it? Because what the culture thinks about it does affect us. And sometimes it's in ways that we don't identify until we have to try to point it out. So what does our culture say is the definition of temptation? How would they describe temptation?
Seems like it's usually an excuse to, like, I know I was wrong, but this tempted me, and I couldn't help it, and it was like something outside of my control.
Yeah, it's like an excuse or a rationalization for why I did something. Yeah? Because it's fresh on my mind. One of our favorite movies at my house is The Emperor's New Groove, and you have Krunk, who's just hilarious. I'll laugh every time. More than my girls do, I think. But he's got the little devil and the little angel that come on his shoulder, and the little devil is trying to get him to do something wrong, usually. So some things I think the culture views it like that, like we've got this little, you know, naughty version of something that tries to influence us. There's that kind of cultural understanding, there's this little devil that's trying to get me to do the wrong things. What other ways might the culture describe temptation?
It can be similar as far as to like a biblical definition, in the sense like they're not going to necessarily call it sin, but like it was tempting, it was alluring, it was very similar to how we're tempted, like the biblical, like it's wrong. Like they might say, like it's alluring. It was like still like a weakness type thing. I mean, they still have usually like there's a lot of movies or books that are saying something's tempting. Like it's similar, like, but they won't call it like sin. Something that we have control of too.
Do you think the culture views temptation in a negative light? Does that have a negative connotation?
I think sometimes they just view it as you have to follow your heart, so if you're tempted to go that way, that's just the way you need to do it. So there's not really sometimes a negative event on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. How would an unbeliever distinguish between following their heart and being tempted to do something wrong?
Just the social pressure. I think, you know, you talk about it, media portrayals, like I'm not, you know, you see like a calm character and like a wild character, and the calm character is sitting there kind of seething and they're trying to calm themselves down, and they snap on the wild character. So it's not even, so if it's like a social thing, like, yeah, you shouldn't snap at people, it's almost not even a negative, almost more like a sympathetic, like, yeah, I would have snapped at that guy too or whatever. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. What would they say causes temptation, the culture?
Side forces.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example?
Something visually appealing, something tastes good, something feels good.
Yeah. Yeah, with the senses, something is attractive in some way, and that causes me to be tempted. And generally speaking, I think those kinds of temptations in some categories are going to be like the ones that are like, they don't view them overwhelmingly negatively. It's like, oh, that cake looks so good. I just had to have one. It was so tempting. Like, people aren't going to be like, oh, generally speaking, people aren't going to be like, you fell into temptation, you sinner. Yeah, those are going to be like your kind of your respectable sins, so to speak. If you eat another piece of cake or that piece of pie, or you indulge and you watched another episode after the third one, and you like, well, that's understandable. We all kind of do it. It was tempting. Like, those kinds of temptations, I don't think are generally seen as negative, too negative. Maybe they're unwise, but not wicked or sinful or evil. Then you have other categories where I can think of, like, substance abuse. Well, I think that would be universally probably still condemned by the culture. They would say that the temptation to do drugs or to drink too much alcohol, well, maybe not, but drugs, drugs in particular, hard, illegal drugs, that still would be like, that's not a good, you're tempted in that way, that's not good. The culture would say
pornography.
I would say it's probably not as negatively.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think,
I mean,
I would say people know that they shouldn't, but I think it's so rampant that I think it's kind of just like a,
it's excusable. It's up there with the excusable.
Mm-hmm. It's assumed that everybody does it anyway.
Oh.
I think. So that one does not quite have the stigma that I think it used to. And it's kind of a boys will be boys kind of a thing.
I think that's another good thing, is just the assumption that if I'm doing it, then everyone else is doing it. So there are certain temptations that, you know, we talk about, like, besetting sins. But the world will be like, well, I give into that, so I assume everyone gives into that.
Okay.
Just to kind of dovetail with what you're saying about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, I think alcohol in some contexts, like, it's assumed that when kids go off to college, what are they going to do? They're going to party, they're going to drink. So it's not like universally, like, you should never do that, and met with shame, and how could you do such a wicked thing? So I think that list of sins that was met with universal shame and disapproval by our culture is dwindling. There's not a whole lot of things on that list that will be met with rejection by the culture. So it's changing, and we're taking some of those sins off and adding on to, like, how dare you tell me how to live my life, you Christian bigot. Yeah. Like, that kind of stuff is becoming unacceptable. That's becoming.
Do you think that our culture's, instead of saying I've been triggered to do this.
Yeah. That is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the new word
that's
for
the,
what?
You, I was triggered. I'm triggered by this. Instead of I was tempted to be angry or fearful, it's now I was triggered by what you said. And that justifies their anger.
Or you don't even have to say anything. You can just be around somebody and they're triggered by this or that. They're fearful or the race issue and all that stuff. You don't
need
to say anything. Just being there can trigger somebody.
Yeah. And some of it seems to, I mean, although with the Israel and Palestine stuff, I think some of it's come back up, but a while it started to simmer down, I think, where you heard the phrase silence is violence. It was like, if you did not say something, you're just as bad. You're met with condemnation. But so what would be the dangers then for the culture? Just thinking down the line. What's the danger of temptation? Not much, right? And there's the dangers of, like, the big ones, like if you're unwise with your money, it would be, if you're tempted to go spend money on this thing, then you're not going to have a good retirement, blah, blah, blah. Like, those kinds of things, they might say that's a danger. Or if you get into drugs, then you might go into harder drugs and worse drugs, and you're going to be homeless, and you're going to destroy your family. Like, there's dangers that way. But mostly, I think they would say the only dangers are to your quality of life, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that? Any comments?
Well, if you drive a fancy car, you're going to be in danger of getting carjacked. I don't know. You're putting yourself, or if you flash a lot of cash, or you dress inappropriately, you're in danger of being, I don't know, being misused. I mean, you can be the temptation and not even, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a danger, just being around people that want what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So before we go to that last one, let's switch over in our minds and think about people that maybe you yourself or people that you know, believers now. How do believers define temptation?
Well, the danger of giving in to something that the Word of God says you should not.
So it's the danger of giving in to, like, sin, right? Okay. Any others?
Maybe a seared conscience.
Okay.
Seared conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Are you dismissing the seriousness of sin?
Mm-hmm. So what would be the causes of temptation for a believer?
The passage that comes to my mind is in James, where it says, but each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust.
No way. You're gonna blame this victim? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So James says, we're carried away by our own desires. Our own lusts. So that's a cause of temptation.
And our sin, just ultimately our sin nature, our depravity,
mm-hmm.
affects every area of our...
Our flesh.
Flesh.
Our sinful flesh.
But when you're in Christ, then you're no longer a slave to that. Mm-hmm. To sin.
So our own desires, our own flesh... longings for things can be a source of temptation. What else?
People you hang out with.
So other people, right? Other people. And I think Pastor Dave's sermon a couple weeks ago, it was really helpful to think about, you know, do not be a stumbling block to these little ones, right? So even Christians, sometimes we can be a source
mm-hmm.
of temptation,
mm-hmm.
okay? But especially unbelievers around us,
mm-hmm.
so people, other people. Any others?
Locations.
Okay.
So, because I've had a couple jobs that have put me fairly close to people who are addicted to substances, and one common thing that happens is that they might get off of that substance, whatever it may be, and then they come back to the location or the area that they were at,
mm-hmm.
and they feel that desire because they've always associated, you know, doing these drugs or, you know, taking part in these actions with that location. So a lot of them, they almost need to move to a completely different town. So,
okay.
So let's say you're in some sort of prolonged, you know, struggle with sin or with, you know, you would go here to do this item or do this thing. You might need to find a way to avoid that or have some sort of accountability when you have to be in that area. So could be anything. Could be anything.
Okay. The devil.
Oh, yeah.
and demons? Can they be a source of temptation?
Well, we know that God is not the source of temptation.
Yes.
So, yeah. Strike him off the list.
Yeah, there's we get into an interesting text. In fact, James, here in a little bit, we're going to have to make a distinction. Because the same word in James 1, verse 2, for trials, is this word for temptation in verse 13. It's kind of interesting. We'll get there. What are the dangers of temptation for a Christian? Is it a big deal?
Our witness.
Okay, you heard our witness. Okay.
It pulls us from fellowship with the Lord and with other believers.
Mm-hmm.
But can't you be, you face temptation, but, I mean, it can lead to sin,
mm-hmm.
but being tempted is not a sin itself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how you respond.
Right.
To
so,
it.
And I think the question is like that temptation is dangerous, and how I respond to it cannot be, shrug my shoulders and just walk on. Like there is a careful defense that we need to have, thoughtful, watchful, for temptation, because if we're not careful, and this is the thing. By the way, we're not going to get into a whole lot of the content this week, but this book has been really helpful. The Enemy Within, it's in our resource center. There are our flesh and the way that we can so subtly give in to temptation
mm-hmm.
is scary.
Mm-hmm.
And so there we have great cause to watch and to be on our guard against all manners of temptation. So it is dangerous because, yes, it can hurt our witness. It can break, you know, or break our close fellowship with the Lord and with other Christians if we give in to it. Right? If we give in to temptation or put ourselves in a place where we are going to be tempted, it displeases God, it grieves the Holy Spirit. We're inviting sometimes. There's this, something that I've learned as I've studied is we put ourselves in positions to be tempted. And that's a little bit different sometimes. Sometimes we are going to places where we know I'm going to be more tempted here,
mm-hmm.
that's the first step towards indulging in the sin. Okay, so to take Jason's example from a moment ago, if I have struggled with a substance abuse issue and I'm going to go to the bar to witness, okay, I'm putting myself in a place where I will experience a greater temptation. That is foolish. And I would lean towards saying that's sinful. Now, there's a way we can have a discussion about what, you know, are you actually going there to witness? Are you actually, like, but in general, our sinful flesh is so deceptive and so sneaky that we might tell ourselves, to convince ourselves, yeah, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to be a light for Christ. But really it's because I'm attracted to that thing, that scene, that environment. And that is a desire for something that dishonors the Lord. And it is so subtle. It is so dangerous to flirt with these things that we have struggled with in the past. The outcomes of temptation can be that we resist it, okay, and we run away and please the Lord. Outcomes can also be that we sin, or that we gradually are wearing down our conscience. Joe mentioned this earlier, we can have a seared conscience. How does that happen? Gradual steps in the wrong direction towards the temptation, giving in just a little bit, rationalizing it. Well, I didn't do it all the way. I didn't go all the way. I didn't. That is how our conscience becomes deadened and numb. Let's go to that question number one. What are some biblical stories or examples that come to mind about temptation?
Adam and Eve first.
Yeah.
That's first one. Mm-hmm.
Yep, Adam and Eve. Yep.
David and Bathsheba. Mm-hmm.
David and Bathsheba.
Jesus himself.
Mm-hmm. Temptation of Christ.
Peter's denial.
Okay, Peter, yeah. Any others? Those are all good examples. We're gonna examine some of those in the coming weeks to really figure out, okay, what happened? How did David get there? Mm-hmm. This was not young, rash David. Like, didn't really know what he was doing yet, and then it just kind of sprang up on him. You know, this was like David after years of faithfully serving the Lord. This is like varsity David. How could that happen? Big hero, man after God's own heart, David, commits adultery and murders and covers it up. Yeah, so we're going to take a look at that. We'll look at Adam and Eve. How does it happen? You're in a perfect environment. Nothing wrong. Why would you do that? How could you do that? How does that happen? So those are great. We're going to look at a lot of those. We'll look at Israel as a nation as well. You know, God brings them out of Egypt, and then they're just faithful and thankful all the rest of their days, aren't they? Nope. Nope. He gives them the promised land, and they stay faithful. They obey everything. No, they don't. Why does that happen?
Proverbs 5 counsels men to stay away from the door or the house even of the forbidden woman.
The forbidden woman, yeah. Mm-hmm. So our objective today, with the time we have left, thought out to one time. All right, we have, we're going to define temptation. We'll get a couple of biblical definitions, and then we're going to just take a brief look at the basic causes of temptation. Okay, so temptation, the word is there. You can look it up later. Also look up the pronunciation, but the word you see is 3986, and it has two meanings. Number one is trials with a beneficial purpose and effect. So trials or temptations, divinely permitted or sent. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Or number two, what we more commonly think of, are trials definitely designed to lead to wrongdoing or temptation. Okay. One other one says it's enticement to commit evil. It's one way to define temptation. Okay. Another one says, that which attempts to persuade a person to do wrong, especially by promising a good result, such as pleasure or gain. That's the negative sense. The positive sense, however, temptation can also denote a testing, often with the goal of bringing a person to a higher level of knowing, honoring, or serving God. So what's an example of a temptation that attempts to persuade a person to do wrong? Some of you have already given some examples. David. What are some other examples of temptations that persuade us to do wrong? It'd be common in the church.
Spread gossip.
Gossip, yeah. Mm. Temptation. What's the temptation? What's the draw of gossip? Everybody knows that's wrong, right? We know that's sinful. We don't want to gossip. Why do people do it then?
Usually to make someone else lower and themselves higher.
Okay. It's kind of a self-exaltation. What else?
I did hear lately how prosperity can be a temptation because you tend to see your success as your own doing and boast yourself up with pride and forget God in the process.
Yeah. Because I want people to think I'm really great. So pride, Kate, what did you say, Kate?
To be in the know.
Oh, so yeah, so back to gossip. I want to know things. Mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on with so-and-so. Okay, I want to know the background.
When people are counseling, do men ever counsel women all alone? See, I've seen that happen in our own community. We had a pastor that was counseling a female without anybody around, and of course,
why is that unwise?
It didn't go well. So it is unwise because of the temptation of relationship, you know.
And let's just for a moment say that we're assuming the best intentions of that minister, and we're saying, okay, he really genuinely wants to care for this woman, and there, what's the danger? The temptation, as he's counseling, is she's telling him all the things that are wrong, and he wants to help, and then there's dangers that come up.
And there's dangers not in just what actually happens, but in the perception, and what she believes, and what others believe.
Yeah.
There's a
lot of factors that make me fall. Yeah. So we've got lots of things that we can identify. Those would be temptations to sin, temptations to pride, selfishness, insisting on my own way. Lots of conversations with my children about that lately. Okay, love does not insist on its own way. I'm insisting on my own way. I want the songs that I want to play and sing at church. I want the coffee that I want. I want the cookies and I want those things. I'm insisting on my own way. That can be a temptation. Really, the temptation is I want to be comfortable. I want things like I like them. Churches in church to make me comfortable, to be for me. There's any number of them. What about the second one? Question three. What is an example of a temptation that denotes a testing with the goal of bringing a person to a higher level of knowing, honoring, or serving God? What would that be?
Abraham and Isaac.
That's a great example. When God, Genesis 22, I have it brought up, actually. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will show you. There's a testing there. God tests Abraham. Why is he doing that? To incite him to evil? No. Few verses later, and Abraham, verse 10, reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. So there's God. Now, did God need to know that? God need to learn that? No. But he's testing Abraham's faith to help him bolster it, to strengthen his faith, to make him more reliant on the Lord, to help him trust God with all things, not just the things that he doesn't care about, but not his son. But God is doing a good thing through that. Any other examples?
Paul's thorn in his flesh.
Okay. Yeah. So Paul had a thorn in his flesh. He prayed three times for it to leave, and God said, no. It's good for you.
You think Potiphar's wife was some way destined Joseph?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that was maybe ordained somehow?
Yep. We'll look at Joseph as well.
No, the thorn in his flesh was her.
And he'll be an exemplar for us to look at.
Okay.
Is that, yeah, she, day after day, she was trying to get him. And day after day, he resisted, and he would not even be with her in the same area. And we'll take a look at what he said. Why would he not do it? No, we'll get caught. That's not what he said. How could I do this wicked thing and sin against God?
Question. So like the 2 and 3, like where there was the example of temptation that attempts a person to do wrong, like if we're resisting that temptation, could that also like lead into 3? Like, I mean, God doesn't tempt us.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like the goal, like it leads, like you're not, like you resisted that temptation. Is this 3 with, so my question is with 3, with this question, this is temptation that it's more like a trial?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oftentimes, especially when we look at like God's testing of Abraham, God's testing of his people, of Israel, we'll take a look at. When God tests us, it is always for the purpose of, like that definition said, that our faith would be strengthened, that our trust in Christ would be grown and greater, we would know the Lord better, it would be more holy. Okay? So that's one of those distinctions that we'll talk about as we go through. How do we reconcile this difference between the testing and trials from God versus the testing, the temptations to evil from not God?
This may not be it, but temptations that persuade a person to do wrong usually feel good, and the temptation testing that brings us to a greater level of sanctification is not always so much.
Yeah, those are good general statements. A lot of times those temptations to do evil are going to, the reason it's a temptation is because there's something that feels good or is easier or is attractive. It's going to benefit us in some way, even if it doesn't. Like, I can think of like temptations to be rich, to have power. You may not, it's not going to be easy, but some people work really hard because the temptation is that is going to benefit me, make my life better and easier in some way. There's that allurement of more money gives you more power and more influence and more joy and more friends and on we can go. So people will work really hard and deny themselves a lot of things to get that, because the temptation is this will be worth it. But yeah, I think in general, for most people, temptations are going to be taking the easy way out somehow, in some way. So let's look at some examples then in Scripture of both of these. So James 1, 2 and 3. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. That word trials is the same root word that we get temptations just a little bit later in James 1. Same Greek word. And we see, blessed is a man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him. And verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. So how do we tell the difference between when James is using trial for our growth versus enticement to do evil?
I'd say in how God can redeem it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I know there's probably going to be a more concrete definition coming up, but I think about temptations that tempt us to sin, where the right answer is just not doing that, fleeing to Christ, where you're just fleeing to Christ, that's probably a temptation, a sin that we put ourselves in, or that's common to us, or things like that. But if it's something where, if we were to speak out and rejoice and praise, like if there was an extra added level of this is how we really redeem this, like an illness in the family or some sort of tragedy that befalls you that is out of your control, if you have a chance to, you know, you can wallow and you can sin in that, or you can honor God in that, or do nothing. When the honor the God one, that's almost more of a, that's where I think, when you have a chance to give God back, or repeat back God's glory to him, would be more of a trial from God.
Okay. So let's look at some examples of that. Psalm 66, 10 through 12. For you, O God, have tested us. You have tried us as silver is tried. You brought us into the net. You laid a crushing burden on our backs. You let men ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, yet you have brought us out in a place of abundance. What is the Lord's testing look like there? What happened to Israel?
It's a proving, like it's a proof that what the faith they had was genuine. If you test silver or gold and you heat it up, it's a test to prove that it's real.
Yeah. Is it pleasant?
No.
No. Okay. So there's a proving, there's a purifying element to it. When God tests is to make us more pure. The heat is not just there because he wants to crank up the temperature. Okay. He says, you laid a crushing burden on our backs. We went through fire and through water. It was not always easy. When God is testing them, men were riding over their heads. The result of his testing is like this proving, like David said, there's a proving that the silver is really silver, and it's not like fake. It's not like a little silver on the outside and the inside's just regular dirt. Okay. There is proving result, and then he does bring them. He brings them to a place of abundance through obedience, and that may not be. When we think about the application of that to our lives, our ultimate place that God is bringing us to is greater holiness, and one day, heaven. Let's look at Deuteronomy 8:2. You shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live on bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Question 7, how does the Lord test Israel here?
Well, it's the physical discomfort that they experienced in their 40 years in the desert.
Yeah, discomfort.
Probably keep wandering for 40 years.
Homeless. Discomfort, specifically hunger.
And they hated that manna.
Yeah.
They complained.
After why they complained about it. Mm-hmm. Even though God was miraculously causing it to show up on the ground in the morning. What were they supposed to learn from this testing?
The faithfulness of God.
Mm-hmm. Faithfulness of God? What else?
To rely on him.
He says to humble them, because they are not in our, we could include ourselves in this as well, as sinful humans, we can, I think I can do it. And I will make sure that my family is not hungry. And I will make sure that we have a home, roof over our head. God is teaching them that He is their provider. He is also teaching them what's more important.
His word.
His word. Right. Man does not live on bread alone. Don't be so focused on physical food. Jesus repeats this, right? Man does not live on bread alone, he tells Satan when Satan's tempting him. But by every word from the mouth of God. The big test is, are you going to obey my commandments? Will you obey it when you don't have a full belly? When you're thirsty, are you going to obey? When you come into a new land that I'm giving you, will you obey? Will you have other gods? Will you destroy the nations I tell you to destroy? You devote the things I tell you to devote? The answer to all those is no. they didn't. Eventually, sometimes they did, but the testing of our obedience then. Look at 1 Peter 6 and 7, 1, 6 and 7. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Why does Peter say trials come?
See if your faith is genuine.
Yeah. Test the genuineness of your faith. Are these trials optional? No, they're not. Why not? Because God is just, you know, up there running experiments just to see, push up buttons to see what we'll do.
Because you wouldn't choose that if
right.
You had a choice.
Yeah. So I would choose the easy route. Yeah, I'd choose the easy route to godliness if it were this one. Mm-hmm. Right? I think I love that Peter wrote, it's necessary. Mm-hmm. In this you rejoice. Though now, for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved by various trials. So it tells me that when God gives me a trial, He, in His infinite wisdom, deems it necessary. Not a take it or leave it, but it's necessary. I need this trial. Test the genuineness of my faith, and the faith is more precious than gold. So what would happen if trials didn't come?
How would He bring about sanctification?
Mm-hmm. We would be at kind of an elementary level in our walk with the Lord in our maturity if there were no trials.
Wouldn't see a need for the Lord.
Okay.
If everything's great. I got this.
Mm-hmm. It would feed our pride probably, yeah. So, how do we apply this to biblical soul care? So if you just take these couple of texts, how God tests His people. How might a Christian struggle with this?
Short-term view.
Mm-hmm.
They think God's cruel to even run a test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some young Christians who just don't know a whole lot yet, and maybe they're just been recently saved, and they're enduring this trial, this persecution that they did not have before. I'm getting made fun of because of my Christian beliefs. Why is God allowing this to happen? So we could help that person, right? Hey, it's momentary, it's necessary, and it's proving the genuineness of your faith. Same thing if somebody is suffering with an illness or disease or an injury. Whatever the struggle is, we recognize that God in His goodness is putting these trials into our lives specific for us. The way that it happens, who it comes through, the situation that we're in, money-wise, as a country, whatever the realm that you want to think through, the trial that we're going through, it is the perfect trial to accomplish what He wants to accomplish in you. He couldn't make it any more conducive to growing you. That's what His wisdom means. And His sovereignty, He puts things in the perfect position because He knows what you need. And we all been through those, right? Mm-hmm. So the answer to number 12, I'll just give it to you, right? Number 12, how could that help us care for? We've been there. Mm-hmm. We've experienced hard things, and it can give us a compassion for people who are going through that. And having this knowledge will help us to really care for their souls. If that young Christian, now we know that if it's a genuine believer, then God will help, but I can be used by God to help encourage that young Christian to be like, oh, so the persecution, that is what I should expect. It is a way to prove that I am actually a Christian and I'm just doing it for perceived benefits.
Russell Butcher could have watered it down a lot and just minimized and made it just okay so it sounded good to everybody, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. And he's paying the price, but it was worth it, I'm sure, for him to say exactly what he believed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, and there are many things that he said that were good and right and we could relate to. We wish that, you know, pray for him and
yes.
His soul, that he would really see the biblical doctrine of salvation. But yeah, he's got there's a lot of wise things that he said in that speech.
He said what he believed.
Mm-hmm.
And what people need to understand now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So with that part, let's just start this next. We got a few minutes here. We'll get into where does temptation come from? And the first one is Satan. Not the most common one, but clearly in Scripture, we see that Satan tempts. Matthew 4, 1 through 3. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Now, fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And the tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." Then again, 1 Thessalonians 3, 5. For this reason, is Paul writing to the church, when I could bear it no longer, I sent to learn about your faith for fear that somehow the tempter had tempted you and our labor would be in vain. So Satan is called the tempter. One of his big roles is to tempt believers. Any thoughts or comments along those lines? Okay, so that was an easy one. What about the wicked? The wicked. Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 4. When the Lord your God brings you into the land you are entering to take possession of it, and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, Hivites, the Jebusites, seven nations more numerous and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God gives them over to you and you defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. You shall make no covenant with them and show no mercy to them. You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons or taking their daughters for your sons. For they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord would be kindled against you and he would destroy you quickly. So the neighboring nations were a source of temptation. How? What were they going to tempt Israel to do?
Very simple. Like, they sacrifice children to their gods. They had idols that were gods.
Yeah. Worship false gods.
They were going to be turned from God through
interfaith marriage. Yeah. So intermarrying would lead to compromise and idolatry. So how can we learn? What can we learn from God's warning to Israel here in our context? What are some application points?
The friends that you keep will influence you.
Yeah. So the friends that you keep will influence your behavior, your desires, what is acceptable. That's a great application. Anything else?
Unequally yoked. Your husband or wife is really going to determine.
That is huge. How important is who you marry?
I think there's a, to a certain degree, kind of, you know, Christ teaching. Says don't throw your pearls before swine, well then don't go in the pig pen. I mean, there's just some things you don't engage in, some groups of people that when they have like the hometown advantage and when they're in their element and things like that, that's not going in there maybe isn't the best idea. Maybe getting them away from her kid, or like when you're like don't like you wouldn't go to a gentleman's club to witness, like that's not going to be conducive when it's operating hours. So, you know, just not putting yourself in a place where you're setting yourself up for failure. Be thoughtful. You know, plan when you're going to engage with people, not.
Mm-hmm. So who you hang around with, who you surround yourself with, and who you marry.
Mm-hmm.
There is almost no more important decision that you will make is more important than the career you choose to go through and do, the job, where, what house you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all important, right? Those are all important things. Who you marry is more important. Those are great, great comments here. So with that, let's go ahead and stop there and we'll pick up with Proverbs 1, as the wicked are enticing the son of Solomon. Thank you, everybody.